things we could possibly do is, as we're all thinking about this, I've just recently met Donna, and the concept of this transition has come to the fore, and my eyes kept widening. I saw a number of other people's eyes widening at the same time. This is a big deal, and I wish we had longer than 12 months to come up with solutions. But given we have a program that we're really interested in collaboration and partnership, we can share some of the tools that we come up with of how we try to resolve some of our data issues in our program. So this presentation is to use the BioSense program as an example of how we currently use ICD-9 codes and some thoughts about how we're going to deal with the transition to ICD-10. And currently the BioSense program is going under an extensive redesign process, and this doesn't really reflect what that process is. This is just demonstrating where we are currently with the BioSense program. And this transition will be dealt with in the redesign program. So can I have a show of hands? Who's ever heard of BioSense and knows what it is? Oh, fantastic. That's great. So BioSense is a surveillance system designed for outbreak detection and adverse events detection, healthcare utilization monitoring, as well as real-time health situational awareness. We provide reports to the Emergency Operations Center. Given the events of the past couple of days, my team back at the office is providing reports back to CDC's Emergency Operations Center on syndromic surveillance, what we're seeing in terms of, and what we're planning for both the earthquake and Hurricane Irene. What type of data sources do we get data from? So we get it from nearly 1,000 Veterans Affairs facilities, 360 Department of Defense healthcare facilities, and nearly 700 non-federal hospitals. And what type of data do we get? So we get chief complaints, and a chief complaint more or less is a brief summary of why a patient showed up in a healthcare venue, and it's usually transcribed by the first clinician that someone encounters. It's supposed to be in the patient's own words. Sometimes it's very heavily translated into medical jargon. But we try to parse those sentences and those structures and turn those into syndromes and subsyndromes, and I'll describe those in a second. But we also use working and final diagnoses that are based upon ICD-9, CM, and CPT codes. And I'm going to more or less lump CM and CPT in the generic ICD-9 for the rest of the presentation. But for some of the hospitals also provide more detailed information that includes laboratory, radiological, and pharmaceutical data. But it's kind of spotty. It's very episodic in terms of which facilities provide what types of data. So what types of things does this program do? It provides an all-hazard situational awareness reporting mechanism on the data that we receive to provide a perspective on national level, a state level, as well as local. It also tries to inform CDC programs and state-based existing public health surveillance systems with the analytics that we have come up with. And we do this largely through a number of different partnerships. It's great to see a lot of you guys in the audience this morning. And so here's a map of the coverage. So best way to describe this. So there's a chloropleth map at the base of this, and it ranges from dark blue to yellow. And that represents the overall population. The darker the color, the more dense the population is in those areas. So you'll see Southern California, very dark blue. The non-federal hospitals are represented by the red dots, and you'll see that we have all of the NC Detect system, thank you, Amy, is represented by in North Carolina. And the purple diamonds represent the Veterans Administration facilities that are across the country, and the orange pentagons are Department of Defense, and those are usually on bases, obviously. And BioSense is based upon the concept of syndromic surveillance. So what is syndromic surveillance? Syndromic surveillance data is derived from pre-diagnostic or preliminary data that's often really incomplete. And we pull it out of the chief complaints in these ICD-9 codes, and sometimes it's problematic because we don't have any context of what this ICD-9 code is really about because of some of the inherent limitations of ICD-9. But we're able to do this without prior confirmatory laboratory information. This can provide trending for seasonal events and identify clusters of diseases that don't need lab data. And examples of this are asthma events, burns, carbon monoxide exposures, influenza-like illness, and heat-related illness, which has been a big problem this year. The BioSense program is based upon 11 macro syndromes, and these range. These syndromes were developed in around 2003 and 4 with a cross-cutting working group. And these syndromes range from botulism to fever. They're very generic. Respiratory illness, rash, neurological syndromes. But within these, we've got about 80 sub-syndromes that map into these macros. And there's more or less a hierarchy to these. The ones outlined in red, allergy, influenza-like illness, chest pain, cough, all map to, for example, the respiratory macro syndrome that referenced on the prior slide. So how do we extract information out of chief complaints or ICD-9 codes? For chief complaints, we map it out of keywords. And a lot of those keywords were determined originally, if you can work this with me, originally on the ICD-9 mappings to start off with. So we used the contextual information for example, how influenza is described in 487, and took all of those terms and turned that into the chief complaint criteria. So here's two examples of two chief complaints: fever to 102, cough and rapid breathing. The next one is fall and forehead laceration. So these would subsequently map to our fever syndrome, cough, and the second one would map to falls and open wound. And I do recognize that we suddenly have two patients that are mapping to five syndromes. That's also a challenge. How do we manage that? How do you analyze those data? And when this gets more expansive in the future with ICD-10, how are we going to deal with further categorizations? So here's an example of ICD-9 and our mapping table. On the far left-hand corner, you'll have the ICD-9 codes. And in the middle table, this is just a subset of a couple of different examples. The first couple are gastrointestinal examples. The second few are respiratory, and then sudden death and illness. One of the examples of how this is going to be changed is currently 487.x is the ICD-9 code for influenza. Well, in ICD-10, I believe it's J10 and J11. That's the only code I've memorized so far. But that's good because I almost exclusively work on influenza.
There's only 37,000 to go.
So here's a time series example in MMWR Classic Blue. They wouldn't let us use any other colors if you've ever published in the MMWR. A time series example for the wildfires of 2007 in San Diego. On the horizontal axis, we've got time, starting at late September over to early November. And on the vertical axis, we have the total number of visits in the count. In the dark blue line, we have the final diagnoses of asthma by a physician. So that's an ICD-9 code. And the dotted line represents the chief complaint of that. There are tiny little diamonds. I don't know if you can see those. Those diamonds represent statistical anomalies that we've detected based upon the algorithms that we run continuously and automatically on all of our data. And this demonstrates you'll see a peak there's a call out in the middle of that screen that demonstrates when the fire started, and subsequently we have an immediate uptake in the number of diagnoses and chief complaints related to asthma-like illness. Those drop off over time and as the fires are contained and evacuations orders are rescinded. What that was about. Oh, okay. So here's a list of a number of activities that this program does. Look at ongoing situational awareness, as I described earlier, hurricane surveillance pre and post. We're spinning up activities right now to get a really good handle on baseline, looking at Irene, having any idea where it's going to land. H1N1, dengue, the Gulf oil spill, and special studies. We've been working on great special studies with NC Detect in terms of oral health and actually developing new syndromes. We're also looking at bicycle injuries with the Boston Department of Public Health, and those are new syndromes of looking at different types of fractures and injuries and magnitude of impact. Donna already stole all my thunder. So what are the limitations of ICD-9? It works great for 30 years, so it's not that bad, but it's really limited in its structure. It doesn't have the clinical specificity that really helps us to understand the complexity of disease and injury. It also doesn't let us understand other indicators for what's impacting health. Lack of context, venue of injury, and other underlying conditions. And it doesn't allow us to explore new questions. Those are they're really excited about trying to leverage data regarding socioeconomic impact, lifestyle issues related to health, and a host of other things. The benefits of ICD-9, Donna tried to downplay this. I'm going to try to upplay it. In terms of the diagnostic codes, it's a fourfold increase. I think that's great. I'm really excited about the detail. In terms of procedure codes, it's an 18-fold increase. Again, I'm pretty excited. And then it also expands the medical terminology, and it's going to allow us to have more robust ability to explore morbidity and mortality of diagnostic disease. Donna already covered this in terms of the E-codes, a place of occurrences and activities. But I just think it's really important to underscore the possible impact in terms of emergency response during the Gulf oil spill. We're really concerned about worker safety and the general populace. We're trying to figure out, did you encounter oil while you were walking on the beach or while you were wearing a hazmat suit for BP? And this could really help characterize something like that. So here are some generic considerations that I think we all can benefit from based upon us thinking about our specific program. You might really have to modify how you're processing and storing these data. It is semantically and syntactically very different, the structure of these data. There's going to be a whole lot more data. Are you prepared for the messaging volume? Are you going to be able to store these data? Are your data METs, DBM is data messaging brokering? Are your quality control checks prepared to look at the differences? And are you going to have the lexicon to cross-check these data as they come through? Storage is going to be a concern, although it's supposedly really cheap these days. But like Donna said, how are we going to leverage our current data that we have and prepare for this transition? I'm thinking about it interim solutions. It's not going to be one solution. That maybe you have to have it tiered. Do we, as we phase into October 2013, we have an interim solution where we're downcoding our ICD-10 to match our historic data, because everything we do in our program is based upon baseline. So we have a two-year baseline for almost anything we do. But then when we get to 2016, now we have ICD-10 baseline. So now we can migrate to that. And maybe some different strategies of trying to have multiple steps. Leveraging the GEMS, the general equivalence maps that Donna described. And then in terms of the syndromic definitions that I talked about earlier, we have a really great opportunity to further elucidate those and make them more specific and more readily useful for our program and others, or not. And at the same time, we can help use this opportunity to improve our analytic and reporting methods. And then what do you do about early adopters and the people that show up late to class? Some people were working on their presentation until last night. Some people finished several weeks ago. We're going to have the same thing with the adoption of ICD-9, and there is this mandate. And what if one of our partners that sends us data, they're ready to go early? How do we accommodate that? And if we're not ready to receive those data, that could be problematic. And same for any other program that uses these type of data. And training is going to be huge. We're going to, in terms of our team that we have, I know one code, so I'm good with flu, but everything else, it's going to be a little more of a challenge. And with that, I think this is the most important thing. This is a really great opportunity to embrace a change that's coming and leverage it to help us work on public health surveillance and really make a difference. And I think Seth was mentioning doing more with less, but in this case, we're going to be doing more with more, and that second more is data. Thank you.
One point of clarification. When it comes to medical procedures, the ICD-10 PCS is going to be used in the hospital realm. The CPT codes will continue to be used in outpatient practice. For those of you who have become attached to those codes, you need not transition. But it's one more set of complexity here. So some of the issues we have not yet mentioned are, first, this transition is taking place at the same time as a wide variety of transitions related to meaningful use. Mm-hmm. So there are changes going on in message structure, in transport, and everything else that have our IT departments and have the IT departments at hospitals and clinics already very busy. There are some people who believe that this transition isn't going to happen or happen in a timely manner. But we do believe that the federal government is hunkering down and attempting to resist the temptation of pushing it back. Practically speaking, our organizations are going to have to try and, if you will, weather two storms simultaneously. And this is the storm that for too many organizations may have been slipping under the radar. Mm-hmm. Let's hear what you have to say, both what you are doing and what you are needing and what you are wondering.
Hi, Amy Ising from North Carolina. I have a question for Donna. In our experience working with the ICD-9 CM codes from emergency departments, they weren't even fully leveraging the 14,000 codes available. They seem to fall back to the non-specific codes. And a lot of hospitals rely on coding software that also seems to just go to the non-specific codes. And I'm wondering if you do outreach to those coding software vendors, and also it seems like everything has to be tied to reimbursement to get people to use it. Will the use of the more specific codes be tied to higher reimbursement or anything like that?
So hopefully microphone?
Sorry.
There we go.
Amy, you're correct that for the emergency departments, they sometimes don't use the specificity that's already in ICD-9 CM. But a lot of that has to do with the fact that hospitals sometimes tend to use checklists, and the checklists are the ones that give you fewer codes to fit on a piece of paper. But I think over time, as reimbursement and other data users are looking at the need for richness and more specificity, I'm thinking that they're going to start to move away from using those less specific codes. And in fact, there are some insurers that will return a claim, even though CDC doesn't work in the claim environment. We do hear the stories. Some insurers will return a claim if a non-specific code has been used. So I think over time, the providers will get that message that they need to provide more detailed information. For reimbursement, the big picture, the MSDRGs that CMS has migrated using the ICD-10 code sets, it's basically a zero-sum game, so there is no change for the here and now. Whatever you were paid for a DRG in a 9 CM-based environment, the payment will be the same. However, I believe the thought is that once they've accumulated sufficient data, 1 to 2 years of data collection with the ICD-10 based codes, that there will likely be some readjustment of the DRG system and other payment systems. But again, even now with changes to ICD-9-CM, it still takes 12 months to 24 months for any changes in the DRG system to actually flow through. But the change, I think, the potential for change, I think, will be greater with the ICD-10 code sets because of the greater detail.
So are there people unfamiliar with the term DRG? A show of hands if anybody doesn't know what DRG means. Okay. Oh, okay. So hospitals have to submit kind of bundled sets of codes to fall into groups, and those groups determine the reimbursement. The fact is, any smart hospital then, of course, is gaming might be too strong a word, but are working towards matching the best codes with the best reimbursement strategies. In ambulatory practice, where DRGs are still unusual, basically, unless practice has radically changed, if you can't fit the set of codes you're going to pick from on a single page, legible to an older doctor, and with a slot at the bottom marked other, those are the code sets you're going to get. And if you get more than four digits onto that and onto that page in any medical practice, that's it. Sundak's got the microphone. We'll keep your keep raising your hand.
And
between
you'll be a
every speaker.
It's a quick one, I promise. So Tom Savelle, CDC R&D. So maybe it's a very naive question, but if I were asked to give some advice to some CDC programs or public health or other programs that were looking to this issue about this transition, I'm surprised that no one has mentioned UMLS as potentially using that tool for the concepts, saying,
UMLS,
so for example, what?
UMLS, you said it very fast.
Oh, I'm sorry, the Unified Medical Language System, yes. But it has concepts, and so there's, if a program said, what do we do, because we're going to transition, we're going to have three different phases, and I said, well, if you put into your system, in your database, the concept of whatever terms, regardless of whether it's the IC9 or 10 or 11, you're still mapping to a concept. And no one's mentioned that, and maybe I'm completely naive, but to me it seems like an airbag to help at least make sure that you're collecting the right concepts.
So is UMLS a potential bridging code set for the way public health codes information?
So we have a representation from NLM, source of truth. UMLS cannot think. Vivian can speak.
The UMLS is an excellent starting place because it allows what we have done in our insertion process is to map between code sets at the concept level. I say starting place because that's not necessarily the best match for a specific business case. So you'll have to look at those mappings and see whether or not they actually apply for what you're doing. But as a starting place, they're excellent.
So let me follow up and ask Donna a question in this regard. So most of us weren't working the field the last time an ICD transformation happened. You notice it was in 1970-something. Many of us do remember when the definition of AIDS changed radically in the 80s. And you remember what graphs looked like. And then there was a blank space on the page, and then there was a new graph that started there. And that's the kind of change that we foresee happening here and that programs are going to be forced to map their way across the best they can. So Donna, needless to say, the National Center for Health Statistics creates a lot of lines, you know, incidence and prevalence based on ICD codes. Are you looking to EMLS or other bridging code sets to do that in any way?
Even though NCHS transitioned several times from one version of ICD to another, this time it's going to be a little bit different, but we'll also have a lot of different tools available to everyone. Everything was paper-based when we went from ICD-8 to ICD-9, and the industry relied it on what we call dual coding, where you took group of records and you coded it with one code set and then you coded it with the other and you came up with ratios and the ratios were applied to your data. Again, horse is out of the barn, the door is locked, can't do that anymore. But as Vivian mentioned, I mean, the number of tools that we have available to help understand those disconnects and whether or not the disconnect in trends is actually based on the code set or whether it's actually based on a real health event will be much more readily apparent, and that analysis will be forthcoming. The thing that Vivian was mentioning related to the code sets, ICD-10-CM, ICD-9-CM, ICD-10-PCS, SNOMED, all of those are in the UMLS and is another great tool to use, but again, it's concept-based. And when you're trying to look at some of the devil is in the details type of work, the general equivalence maps are another alternative to help you understand the differences. And NCHS will be using those maps. I mean, when we developed those maps, it was for everyone, but also specifically knowing that NCHS doesn't have real records. We never see a real medical record, so we had to have a tool that would assist the programmers and other data users in understanding the transition issues related to the use of the two code sets.
I don't know if any other panelists have anything to add on this one.
Yeah, in terms of the suggestion for using UMLS, when we originally derived the biosense syndromes and subsyndromes, we used UMLS as a reference. It's a critical tool for us, and we may use it more for, say, our macro syndromes, which are more concept-based, and really drill down. And we don't want to lose the specificity in our sub-syndromes and actually probably go into a more finer detail using other code sets.
Donna, do you want to mention the mapping projects, or do you want me to describe them? There's two projects we want you to know about, both mapping from SNOMED. One is from SNOMED to ICD-10 at the international level. That project is being led by the International Health Terminology Standards Development Organization, the IHDSDO. They own SNOMED, and they're doing it in conjunction with the WHO, and NLM and NCHS both have people involved in this project. They are planning, I believe the end of September, they're going to publish the first piece of that. And it's, they used as the starting kernel the core problemless subset of SNOMED CT that's published on the National Library of Medicine's site. The second project that is going to be an outcome of that is we're using that map from SNOMED to ICD-10 to create a SNOMED to ICD-10 CM map. And we're just finalizing the preparation of that at this point, and we're about to hire people who are going to actually create the map. So we're hoping by the end of this year we'll have the first pieces of that. All of this will be published on the NLM website.
So could you summarize those again? The first is ICD-9 to SNOMED, and the second SNOMED to 10?
The first is SNOMED to ICD-10.
Okay.
The second is SNOMED to ICD-10-CM.
Oh, very good. Yes, and this may pass people. ICD-10, already in use in the United States for coding deaths on death certificates. Mm. ICD-10-CM, a different code set, considerably more complex than ICD-10 used on death certificates today. So don't confuse the two. The second project is mentioned as an NLM project. Give them the credit. Thank you, NLM.
Hi, I had a question. You mentioned there's general equivalency mapping tables. Are there any SAS or SQL code that's written already that can compile and do the transition for you, or is that yet to be done?
Yet to be done.
Yet to be done, okay.
And hopefully to be shared, of course.
Yeah.
Right. So if people have ideas about how that happens.
Yeah, Andy, one of our innovative SAS programmers has already started tackling that internal to our team. So hopefully, if it looks like it's bearing fruit, we would avail that. But it's a significant undertaking.
So, Dr. Fuld, I have a question in the meaningful use context.
Yes.
So I've been working in CDC vocabulary team for the past 8 years. I've been looking at the challenges and issues in adopting the clinical care vocabularies like LOINC and SNOMED, and everybody adopts the ICD-9 easily because you have the money there, incentives there, they're going to use it. So in the meaningful use, all these incentives are being given trying to go in the direction of adopt LOINC, SNOMED, and RxNOM. When you transition to October 1st, 2013, when people start using ICD-10 CM, which has much more granularity than current one, do you see people, there would be an impact of these current clinical care vocabularies, people kind of preferring to use ICD-10 CM than using the SNOMED and those kind of things?
I don't think I'm smart enough to answer that question. Of course, in the laboratory realm, laboratories are not reporting diagnoses, findings, et cetera, using ICD codes. They're using Lincoln SNOMED or they're using local codes. So I'm not sure that in that realm. I'd be interested in knowing if the audience has other insights. I know Walter had his hand up, and then there's one in the far back behind the pillar.
Thank you. Walter Suarez, I'm with Kaiser Permanente and the Public Health Data Standards Consortium. I was going to ask a question, but I'll make a comment to your question. The reality is one of the challenges within the practices, Kaiser is not unlike many other practices, where we're going to have, of course, the EMR, the EHR, and the EHR itself is going to have to have a codification, a classification system to record the information whenever there is an encounter. In our case, we are going, and we have in place already SNOMED as the native mechanism to capture a lot of the information in an encounter. When we create a bill, now we're going to have to do the transition from the data that we have in the electronic health record, moving it to the data that we have to generate in the billing system, which is, in many cases, separate from the electronic health record. So that's an important challenge. That's why the SNOMED to ICD-10 and SNOMED to ICD-10 CM is going to be so critical. We ourselves have a convergence terminology mechanism, but we don't have yet the SNOMED to ICD-10. We have ICD-9 at this point, but so it is going to be a challenge. It is already being an identified challenge to try to figure out what our practice is going to do, hospitals as well as clinics, to whether they go natively to SNOMED in the EHR, which is the goal through meaningful use and others by standardizing the code set to SNOMED, or whether they're going to have some dual classification, SNOMED plus ICD-10, in the EHR itself, or whether they're going to use these cross maps to go from SNOMED in the EHR to ICD in the billing system. So that's one interesting challenge that we're all going to be facing. The question was going to be, now wearing my public health hat, there's been a lot of talk about tools and resources, but to what extent is there a simple tool for public health agencies, both local and state, to do an assessment of the various programs that they themselves have to look inside to determine whether an ICD-10 transition is going to affect their programs? And so there's tools that help. I mean, and CDC is doing internally their own assessment. Many public health agencies are beginning, I mean, some of them haven't even started because ICD-10 is being seen as well. That's 2013. We don't have to worry about it now. But there is, in my mind, an opportunity to really create some simplified tool that state and local public health agencies can quickly use and look inside and say, well, these are the top 20 most common programs that are affected by ICD-10 transition. Am I running one of those programs? Do I have one of those programs inside? And then begin to document. And then on top of it, there's this additional unique program that we have that are affected by ICD-10. So that's one thought, perhaps. I don't know if there are ready tools or someone can address that. Or maybe that's one of the things that can be done.
So I see Prachi nodding. Let me just see. Yeah. Prachi, do you know if there is such a tool or just that it's a good idea?
I'm just thinking that's a good idea. I'm not aware of any.
And what I'm going to suggest, we're right close to the end of our time. Yeah. Let me just say that how many people here would join a PH Connect community on ICD-10? Which is a completely open sharing site. You register, you go in. So it's show of hands. That way, that might be a fairly straightforward way for us to take what CDC is putting out there, other people to improve on it and mount their versions and so on. It's not a very sophisticated sharing tool, but it is an easy to use sharing tool, which is often more important. We've got to wrap up with you, and then one last comment.
Yes, just one very quick one quick note. Besides ICD-10, there's something else that is happening starting January of this year, this coming year, called 5010. So most state public health agencies that collect discharge data and collect encountered level data are using the X12 standard that is used in the exchanges for billing and all that. Well, that is moving as well to a new version from 4010 today to 5010 in January. So the other question is, how many of the public health agencies are going to be ready to receive 5010 compliant transactions, or 5010 version of transactions? Because hospitals and clinics that submit encounter level data to public health agencies are not going to be able to support the 4010 versions anymore. They're not going to want to. They're going to want the public health agencies to begin to accept 5010 as well. So that might be another element to assess, and that's coming up January 1st.
Excellent idea. So there was one last hand in the back. I know we started a little late. I think you'll end just a little bit late. Give her the opportunity to ask or comment. This, incidentally, is www.phconnect.org. If you go there today, I'm sure you will find other groups you are interested in. And let us say that within the next few weeks, if you go there, you will find an ICD-10 location. And we're done?
Yeah, I think just one more comment is CST is Surveillance Practice and Implementation Workgroup.
Yes.
So we are collaborating with them to share some of the ideas from ICD-10 Transition Workgroup to communicate with the public health agencies. So that may be a one forum we can share our experience, what we learn internally to the outside group.
And if we had any online questions, I would be seeing them here, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so seeing no online questions, let's give our panel a round of applause. Thank you. Oh, well, actually, we do have one. Do I anticipate any similar issues when WHO introduces the new ICD version in 2015? Do we have any idea if the ICD-10 fix is going to obviate a great deal of change in the ICD-11?
The work that WHO is doing on ICD-11, and my office sits as part of that work effort, much of what is being looked at is already in ICD-10-CM. So I think even though the work continues for WHO, the impact will not be necessarily so huge because most of what is being discussed is already in ICD-10-CM. And that's one of the benefits of having developed ICD-10-CM over a period of time, because we kind of figured out where the pitfalls were and have been feeding that information back to WHO. So I don't expect a huge disconnect, but again, they're in alpha version. I'm not even positive that 2015 is a real date, though I know that is the desired date.
And for people in the room, we are handing out information about the first webcast. Are the two webcasts different or the same?
Same.
Okay, so it's the same content. The first webcast on ICD-10 Transition 101 is Tuesday, August 30th, 12 Eastern Time for 1 hour. If you are interested in this, in details on how to log on, actually, are we intending this? Do we have enough lines for national use? Okay, then contact again, irgovernance@cdc.gov. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.